fighting was the heaviest yet seen in Sarajevo.
The brutal siege of Sarajevo in the early 1990s was the longest in modern warfare. I'm Alan Little, and I reported that war for the BBC. One of the things that surprised me during my time there was that whilst its citizens were targets for mass destruction, the cultural life of the city thrived, including a now legendary production of Waiting for Godot, directed by the American intellectual Susan Sontag.
Putting on a play means so much to the local theatre professionals in Sarajevo because it allows them to be normal, that is, to do what they did before the war, to be not just haulers of water or passive recipients of humanitarian aid. There was one obvious play for me to direct. Beckett's play, written over 40 years ago, seems written for and about Sarajevo.
The play is about two characters, Vladimir and Estragon, who wait in vain for the arrival of someone named Godot. The citizens of Sarajevo waited nearly 4 years for international intervention, so Sontag chose the play for its obvious thematic resonance.
I've come to understand that many people find it surprising that theatre goes on at all in the besieged city. In fact, the audience for theatre in Sarajevo expects to see a play like Waiting for Godot.
I've returned to Sarajevo over 20 years later to talk to people involved in that original production. I wanted to hear from them why they thought the arts mattered, how culture helped them to survive, and what role they thought the arts now played in restoring the city's identity. I began at the Sarajevo Youth Theatre with Haris Pašović, the theatre director and producer who invited Susan Sontag to stage her legendary Godot back in 1993.
What did it look like in here?
It wasn't this nice, you know, it was very worn out. Obviously outside, you know, it was all in ruins. There was no lighting, you know, so we used candles. But candles were a very big luxury at the time. Though we had a lighting designer, you know.
Of course, yeah.
People used to come, you know, really like 10 kilometers on foot to see the show, risking their lives. So they risked their life to come to see the show. Then why shouldn't we risk our life to present the show? I know that, you know, for somebody who listens to this from a normal life, you know, sounds crazy. But the danger was 100%, any place, any time. We could have stopped the show, asked people to leave, and they could all be killed in front of the theater. So we couldn't take responsibility for the forces of the universe. I don't know how to call it.
People were no more a danger here watching the play than they were somewhere else not watching
right.
it. So they might as well watch it.
Right.
And perform it.
Right.
And what I remember is we came and we sat up here as though we were on the stage with the actors,
yes.
watching it unfold, and outside the noise of the war, the shelling and machine gun
yes.
fire as well, I remember, and you felt very enclosed. It was a very intimate experience, in a way, like the war itself, because
yeah.
the war enclosed you in a very small space in Sarajevo, and it was a very intimate, very close war as well. So it was almost like a kind of microcosm representation of the reality that everybody was yeah. living outside.
Waiting for Godot opened with 12 candles on the stage on August 17th. Many people were turned away. And I think it was during the long, tragic silence of Vladimir and Estragon, which follows the messenger's announcement that Mr. Godot isn't coming today, but will surely come tomorrow, that my eyes began to sting with tears. I saw that Velibor, who played Estragon, was crying too. No one in the audience made a sound. The only sounds were those coming from outside the theater. A UN armored personnel carrier thundering down the street, and the crack of sniper fire.
So she came here and was willing to risk her life to stage this production. People were willing to risk their lives to come and see it. Why? Why is artistic activity important? When clearly the most important thing you would think is getting enough food, getting enough clean water, making sure you've got somewhere safe to protect yourself physically. Where in the hierarchy of needs does artistic expression come?
In the same level. Because in the war, it's not the most important thing to survive. The most important thing is to remain today human. And what makes you human, it's not this, what you say. Because that's what the animals also do, you know. I mean, you shelter yourself, you eat. But what makes you conscious, what makes you thinking, being, is, you know, that you say, this is me, this is my life, this is our life, we are human. And what is to be human? You're human when you're a child, when you let the child in yourself speak. When we do that, we are not aggressive then, we are creative, because that's our essence. And that's why art has been a primary need, as much as the food and sex and, I don't know, water. What? So community in this city was endangered so fundamentally that the deepest instinct of survival emerged.
Oh, how funny. That's my picture. They've obviously, I must have given them a set during the war and they've photocopied it. And here you can see the cast all dressed up in their different costumes as Vladimir and Estragon and so on.
Outside the theatre, I met up with Paul Lowe, an old friend from the war years, a photographer who worked here during the siege. He took pictures of that famous production of Waiting for Godot. Paul did his share of combat photography, but while the rest of us were focused on that, he was rare among the foreign journalists in seeing that art was being produced all over the city. It became a kind of resistance, a form of defence.
I think there's a strong sense that the narrative that people wanted to project was not that they were just victims. You know, connecting to the other, bridging that gap between the world outside and what you're experiencing is one of the things that we're always trying to do as artists and as journalists. You're trying to make the audience connect with the people, the art, the work. There were lots and lots of examples of that. And the films that were made during the war, there was a war theatre that went on there was an incredible cellist called Vedran Smilovic who, as his way of paying testament to what had happened here, would come and play his cello in the street where there'd been a really horrible massacre, where people had been queuing for bread at the beginning of the war and people had been, you know, vaporized by a mortar that had landed. He would come at the same time the massacre had happened every morning and play his cello in the street. This sort of, you know, middle-aged guy with a long beard, long flowing hair, sitting there mournfully in his full dinner jacket, like a kind of classical concert musician, playing this incredibly haunting, beautiful cello music. He went to the cemetery and did it. He did it in the National Library that had been destroyed. Became a real symbol, I think, of the cultural values of the city being defended. It's about memorialization. It's really about remembering the past and mourning the past in many ways.
I'm Alan Little, and for the BBC World Service, I have returned to Sarajevo to look at the role of the arts and culture in the city. So this is the historical museum. This building was impossible to come to during the siege years because it was right on the front line and it was far too exposed, and I never set foot in it. And now, it's the repository of Sarajevo's story, the history of the city. Indeed, Bosnia in general, it's the place where the story of Bosnia unfolds for anybody who wants to come and see it and hear it.
What you can see here are the handmade, improvised weapons made of the gas pipes or different pipes or tubes that people made weapons from.
Elmer Hasimbegovic, director of the Historical Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina, is showing me one of the museum's permanent exhibitions, Besieged Sarajevo, which memorialises the city's recent past.
So the exhibition itself is dealing mostly with ordinary people, their lives, their creativity to different objects they made, which helped them survive throughout the siege.
This is an important photograph, isn't it? Tell me about what this meant for the city. What is this, first of all?
We are standing in front of the burning National Library. It was burnt in August 1992, so almost at the very beginning of the war, where 2 million books were burnt during one night.
Including ancient manuscripts and documents.
Including ancient manuscripts, documents, valuable books, yeah.
Irreplaceable, really.
Yeah, most of them.
I mean, there was a deliberate campaign to destroy anything that reminded posterity of the Ottoman tradition and legacy in Bosnia-Herzegovina.
I mean, it was known that it was a city library, so it was not a military goal.
So the material of basis of a shared history being destroyed. Yeah. How important do you think this museum is to the city of Sarajevo?
Obviously it's not, because it's one of the cultural institutions that is completely abandoned by the state, which is not paid or sponsored or financed by any level of the state. It's probably not important to anyone.
Well, it's not important to anybody in political leadership.
Yeah, of course, we are talking about, yeah.
But to the people?
To the people, nowadays mostly foreign visitors are coming. Of course, locals are avoiding because they're traumatizing.
But how do people manage to go on working here if they're not being paid a salary?
I can compare it with the siege situation, the war situation, that you have hope that better times will come.
Today, Bosnia's cultural institutions are struggling to survive. Its national museum has closed. The peace agreement that ended the war divided the country on ethnic lines. The Serb half, known as Republika Srpska, has never accepted the legitimacy of Bosnian identity or Bosnian statehood at all. Serb nationalists fought, after all, to try to destroy Bosnia, not just as a place on a map, but as a very idea. Even now, 20 years on, Bosnia, a country of just 4 million people, has been so divided and subdivided that anything that asserts a pan-Bosnian identity that embraces all the ethnic groups finds itself starved of funds. In another basement, a theatre in which students at the city's Faculty of Dramatic Arts perform Richard III. England hath long been mad and scarred herself that brother blindly shed the brother's blood. That was me reporting in December 1995, in the last week of the war. I was watching a student production of Richard III. Two of its actors were friends of mine, young drama students, Vedrana Božinović and her boyfriend Aleksandar Seksan, who was also fighting in the army. After the war, they married and are now successful actors.
You had at least 20 performances during the war, which was a very productive period. I think that was the good period for culture also, because if you compare it to today, today people just need food and shelter, and they have a TV, and that's it.
But you two have both made successful careers as actors, so there must be a good, thriving cultural scene here in Sarajevo.
I mean, obviously. We just don't have my theater, and it's a national theater Sarajevo. We don't go on tours because we don't have money to do it. We can't play in Zenica, which is like 1 hour away from Sarajevo, because we don't have money to go there.
We have the irony is that we had more money for production after the war at 1996.
And that's partly because the post-war economy of Bosnia has stagnated. There's no economic growth, there's no economic change here.
But our biggest problem is what ended the war. Our biggest problem is Dayton Peace Agreement. And I'm not saying definitely. This as a Serb, Bosnian or a Croat. I'm saying this as a citizen of Bosnia. I'm saying this as an actress of a national theatre that is not a national theatre. So you have a national theater in Zenica, you have a national theater in Tuzla, you have national theater in Sarajevo, you have two national theaters in Mostar, and you have national theater in Banja Luka. So we have six national theaters. None of them is functioning properly.
So what you've just described is the state of Bosnia itself.
Exactly.
It's been divided and subdivided and subdivided again so much that nothing can function at the level of the Bosnian state, including the country's cultural life.
Yeah. When I think about, you know, this country, I think about my children and what will happen with them. You fought for this country, I kind of did what I did, and we stayed, and we never, ever talked about leaving. Never, ever. But do we have a right to do this to our children? I mean, we're still here, and we will not leave. But I will fight till my last breath that, you know, at least culture is valued as it should be. I can't imagine my life without, you know, books and movies and theater performances and exhibitions and concerts and things like that. I mean, what kind of a life would you have? A sad, sad life. And if we didn't accept it during the war, we shouldn't accept it now.
The wartime cellist Vedran Smilovic didn't think of himself as a brave man, but he sat amid the shelling and played his instrument to assert something urgent and humane in the face of the indiscriminate violence that was being inflicted on his city. Bosnia has not yet closed the book on that violence.
This was Europe's worst atrocity since the Second World War.
In July 1995, 8,000 Muslim men and boys were rounded up and murdered by Serb forces at the town of Srebrenica in eastern Bosnia. The town had been besieged and bombarded for 3 years before it fell. And it happened before the eyes of the world, with a battalion of Dutch UN peacekeepers there. In 2003, the photographer Tariq Samara went into the abandoned UN peacekeepers' barracks at Srebrenica and found graffiti written by Dutch soldiers. Graffiti that couldn't have spoken with more eloquent cruelty of the contempt in which the victims of Bosnia's war seemed to have been held. One read, "Mustache, no teeth, smells like Bosnian girl." The Bosnian artist Sheila Kamaric made a poster-sized image of herself and superimposed the graffiti on top. I met her in one of Sarajevo's old town cafes and asked her about the impact that poster had.
The response was really fantastic. In every country of ex-Yugoslavia, they published, you know, in Slovenia, Croatia, Serbia as well, you know. And that's what helped people to start talking, because we were, in a way, ignoring the fact of Srebrenica, because it was a, you know, hot potato that nobody wanted to touch, and like, let's pretend this didn't happen.
So you have a political discourse now in Bosnia which requires people not to raise difficult subjects like the war crimes that were committed, like the people who are still sitting at their desks in parts of this country who organized the ethnic cleansing and who were rewarded for it. The political discourse, in order for there to be progress, requires people not to raise that. I mean, there is an enforced silence, an enforced amnesia. Is it the role of the artists to keep those memories alive? Is it the role of the artist to say, we will not be silenced in this way?
Luckily, we are free as an artist to raise the subject that nobody else would, and that politics is not interested in. That's where actually the, you know, the art and culture plays a huge role. And not only raise the subject which needs to be discussed, but also it really do help people. For example, Bosnian girl, I never thought that the women from Srebrenica will not only notice it, but I had a doubt if they will understand what I was trying to say by putting my image. And then when I saw them taking the poster and bringing it to Hague and taking them as their own and, you know, like printing them, and you see that art also gives a tool to fight and to heal, which is not a shameful thing to do. Art does help people to heal their wounds, to communicate their thoughts. That's the beauty of it.
This is the Bosnian national anthem played here by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra at the newly restored National Library. It was played on the 100th anniversary of the assassination of the heir to the Austrian throne, the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, by the young Bosnian Serb Gavrilo Princip. The concert was intended as a gesture of reconciliation. But half of Bosnia wasn't there, wasn't interested in this reconciliation. Republika Srpska boycotted the concert, in part because of a plaque on the wall of the library that declares that the building was destroyed in 1992 by Serbian war criminals. It is another atrocity that, in the interests of peace and reconciliation, should not be speaking its name, that should be keeping quiet. How can Bosnia grow reconciled to its recent past when political interest demands a deliberate forgetting? Can art provide the redemptive narrative the country so badly needs? In April 2012, on the 20th anniversary of the start of the siege, Haris Pašević took 11,541 red chairs and made an auditorium of them that snaked its way for more than half a mile through the heart of the city. He called it Sarajevo's Red Line. Musicians performed a concert to the empty chairs, each of which represented one of the dead of the siege years.
This moment, which was visibly so strong, was a collective catharsis of Sarajevo people, because we were waiting for 20 years to start crying.
Vesna Zaimovic, editor of Radio Sarajevo, has powerful memories of that day.
We were waiting for 20 years to start screaming and feeling by our body the giantness of this tragedy of Sarajevo siege, because every one of us has its own individual memory, but that was a catharsis of collective memories.
And when you ask, what does art do for a society that's experienced that trauma, even 20 years on? Well, just look at that single individual performance, which only lasted 24 hours, but it did something very profound for the city, didn't it?
Definitely. This is the role of art. This is what we are talking about, that art should be a part of society in a way of creating reality and creating the future, which is much more important.
The Hollywood actress and director Angelina Jolie is a frequent visitor to Sarajevo now.
Thank you so much.
2 years ago, she directed a film performed in Bosnian that was set during the war. On this visit, she was attending the Sarajevo Film Festival, which began during the siege years.
I'm so honored to be here at this festival. I think this festival, there is no greater example of the strength of the artist than a festival that began during a war and grow stronger every year.
Miro Purivatra is the director of the festival.
Regional filmmakers from Serbia, Croatia, Bulgaria, Romania recognize Sarajevo as the place where they can meet each other, where they can present their projects, find financiers through our co-production market, and we created the Talent Sarajevo educational platform where we have 70 young people from the whole region being here for 10 days, having lectures.
But not from Republika Srpska?
That's very, very good example that young people from Republika Srpska also accepted Sarajevo as their own festival. That means the quality has to win. That's the hope, that politicians cannot stop everyone.
But that's a great example, isn't it, what you've just described, of how cultural activity can overcome politically imposed barriers and create a space, a single space, in which people on all sides of those barriers are exposed to each other's ideas and get used again to living with the idea of plurality of interpretation, with a mixture of traditions and ways of thinking.
Yeah, that's not only here in Bosnia. We are doing even on wider scale. For example, we produced the film where the director is from Kosovo and where producer is from Serbia and the main actor is from Bosnia.
In Sarajevo, as anywhere else, there are more than a few people who feel strengthened and consoled by having their sense of reality affirmed and transfigured by art. Indeed, the question is not why there is any cultural activity in Sarajevo now, but why there isn't more.
I got to know Susan Sontag well during her months in Sarajevo. She and I would meet most evenings for half an hour or so, just the two of us, in that moment when the working day was over, but the evening had not yet begun, and we talk about our very different experiences of the day. I think now that she understood something about the city and its war that we reporters for the most part missed, and that she understood something too about human need, that bread alone really is not enough, that art is an innate kind of resistance, an indispensable way of asserting who you are and the ideals you hold dear, dearer sometimes than your own immediate safety.
The war is the most important experience that one shouldn't have.
Haris Pashovic.
That's why art is important, to transport the war experience for those who didn't have that experience in order to prevent them to have this experience. So I was asked many times, you know, how the war influenced your art. And I always said, horrible. Mm. You know? So, but the war, you know, it's inspiration. No, it's horrible. I would be better artist if I didn't have experience of the war. I think, you know, they don't need to go through the horror in order to be creative. But once you're there, you have to communicate this experience to other people.
Still Waiting for Godot in Sarajevo was produced by Hilary Dunn and is a Loftus production for the BBC World Service.